Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Monday, May 20th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box. As you know, we'll do the same thing next week, despite the Memorial Day holiday, with that Monday, Thursday format, including the Monday mailbag, which I'll do today. You can reach out with your questions on Twitter to @SkatingTripods, or you can email me, adam@bangthebook.com. Got a couple of good questions for you today to kick off today's program. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of great work being done by everybody that has a hand in the content over there. We've got NBA game previews on a daily basis. Parker Michaels still looking through the NHL playoffs here as the conference finals appear to be coming to a close sooner rather than later. He'll have a preview up for the Stanley Cup Finals series. We'll have a preview for the NBA Finals. We're going to start doing some football stuff here in the very near future as well. Putting together NFL and college football season win total previews. A lot of good stuff coming your way here over the next couple of months at bangthebook.com. To go along with everything else that we usually have, my MLB picks and tips piece, soccer, tennis, golf, NASCAR, UFC, all that great stuff that we cover on a daily and weekly basis over at bangthebook.com. And quite frankly, that's how we got to be your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. All right, so we'll start things off here today with the Monday mailbag. As I mentioned, a couple of questions there. Then we'll go beyond the box score, take a look down the lines, recap some line moves that we saw over the weekend, give you a pick for tonight's action, and then preview five series for the week ahead. So let's go ahead and dive right in with the Monday mailbag. Again, @SkatingTripods on Twitter or adam@bangthebook.com via email. Also the best way to get the notes for the show, adam@bangthebook.com. That'll get you on the mailing list. I send those out usually night of the show. I want to give you some time to listen to the show without just looking at the notes, but I try to do that on the same day as the shows. All right, so we start things off with a question here via email from Matt. Said, love when you talk about pitchers bound for good or bad regression based on WOBA, again, weighted on base average. Said he believes that that's the correct step. Says, maybe for the pod or newsletter, a list of the top three and the bottom three pitchers to highlight for the week based on WOBA regression coming. Well, let's go ahead and do that then. Once again, the best way to find this, baseballsavant.com. It's the home of StatCast data on the internet. You go to the leaderboard page. It's up in the top in the navigation menu. In that drop-down menu, under pitching, you go to expected statistics. Set the minimum number of plate appearances to 100. Right now, that will eliminate most of the relievers. Some of them have gotten to that point, so we may have to adjust our sample size accordingly here as we go throughout the rest of the month and on into June. But in any event, it's going to eliminate a lot of relievers. Just makes it easier for you to see all the data there. And then if you sort by DIFF, D-I-F-F, under quality of contact plus K plus BB plus strikeouts plus walks, that's going to give you WOBA, expected WOBA, and then the difference between the two. A positive number means positive regression. A negative number means negative regression. And again, we see a lot of lines predicated on the positive and negative regression from the WOBA to ex-WOBA difference that's out there. So the top 10, again, minimum 100 plate appearances, Mike Wright, he's plus 85 points, which means his WOBA is 85 points higher than his expected WOBA. The expected statistics are on the pitching page. You'll see expected batting average, expected slugging percentage, expected WOBA, and the actual metrics for batting average, slugging percentage, and weighted on base average. So Mike Wright, number one there, plus 85 points in WOBA minus ex-WOBA. Corbin Burnes, plus 74 points. He just got shelled again Friday for the Brewers. Chris Stratton, plus 65 points. Tyler Anderson, plus 62. For the Diamondbacks, plus 61. Noah Syndergaard, plus 45. Felix Hernandez, plus 44. Chad Bettis, plus 41. Peralta, plus 41. And then Marco Stroman. Some of those guys are on the disabled list in that top 10 there in WOBA minus X WOBA. But Again, very easy for you to go over to BaseballSavant.com to the leaderboards page. Under the drop-down menu, go to expected statistics for pitching, minimum 100 plate appearances, sort by diff in that right column. Now, the guys that are in line for negative regression, we start with a reliever here, actually, in Brian Shaw, minus 70 points. So his expected WOBA is 70 points higher than his actual WOBA. That's where we get the difference there. So Brian Shaw, minus 70 points. Felix Pena, who should be the bulk reliever tonight for the Angels, minus 66 points. Domingo Herman of the New York Yankees, minus 61 points. Andrew Cashner, who's pitching tonight. And we're seeing a line move against Cashner this evening with Jay Happ going for the Yankees. He's minus 60 points. Shane Bieber, complete game shutout yesterday, 15 strikeouts against the Orioles. He's minus 56 points. Chris Paddock on the mound tonight, minus 52 points. Mike Soroka, minus 51 points. He's also on the mound tonight, seeing a line move against him in that start against the Giants. Then you've got John Lester, who I've faded every single time he's taking the mound, minus 49 points. Chase Anderson, minus 48 points. Then finally, Jake Odorizzi, also on the mound tonight, minus 45 points. So Felix Pena not listed as the starter for the Angels game. I do think he is the bulk reliever. If that's announced before the game, we'll probably see that line swing back a little bit. But so far today, money coming in against Andrew Cashner, money coming in against Mike Soroka, money coming in against Jake Odorizzi. And I imagine we'll see some people taking a shot with Luke Weaver and the Diamondbacks to go against Chris Paddock, who's also on this list. So once again, it's a very easy way to get out in front of line moves or expect line moves. Let's say you like Jake Odorizzi and the Twins tonight. Well, that line's already moved against the Twins. But if you were following along with this difference between WOBA and expected WOBA, you would have known that that line move was coming. So you could sit and wait a little bit on backing Jake Odorizzi. When John Lester takes the mound, I believe on Thursday against Aaron Nola, money will come in on Aaron Nola. So you probably want to take the Phillies early, let that money come in on them. And if you want to buy back or if you like the Cubs, you wait on John Lester in that situation. So again, really you want to look at these guys from a negative regression standpoint. A lot of times the guys with the positive regression aren't very good. I mean, Noah Syndergaard's the best guy in that list by a large margin. Freddie Peralta probably second, maybe Felix Hernandez third. But a lot of those guys just aren't very good pitchers right now. This negative regression category is where you will see the line moves. You'll see some good pitchers, but you'll also see some guys who aren't very good that are getting very lucky. So expected WOBA is a huge, huge factor nowadays. Again, as I mentioned, modelers that I know are using it, and also we're seeing a lot of line moves based on that ex-WOBA difference between WOBA and expected WOBA. Got another question here. This one from Eric via email here, talking about totals and looking at, you know, I've got a second question here from Matt via email. My apologies. Says here that what he likes to do with favorites of one minus 140 or more is go with the minus one line. So essentially what this is that obviously if the team wins the game by one run, it is a push. The difference, of course, being that if it's a money line, doesn't matter how many runs they win by, you win that bet anyway. So the idea here is that you lower vig on these money line favorites by giving back or selling back that run and going with a minus one line. So what Matt wants to know here is, you know, is this something that would pay off in the long term? Obviously, you don't want to sell points in basketball. You don't want to sell or buy points in basketball or football. But what about in baseball? So I ran some of these queries over in the Killer Sports database here for this season. And so far, favorites are 422 and 253 on the season. Favorites are 314 and 357 on the run line, for what it's worth, the minus 1.5. Favorites have won by exactly one run 109 times this season. So favorites have covered the minus one line 313 times. Now, the average line of minus 140 or higher favorites this season is minus 156.1. So it can be a reasonable angle. But once again, favorites have lost 253 times this season. They've won by one run 109 times this season. So favorites winning by more than one run in the 2019 season so far. And again, obviously underdogs were very profitable in April. So maybe this data looks a little bit different for previous seasons. But if you look at favorites in general here, this is just overall favorites. They are covering that minus one line 46.4% of the time, implied line of plus 115. Now, of course, you know, if the favorite loses, you know, then you'd lose your bet anyway. It doesn't matter if they win by one run or not. In a lot of instances, like anything else, this is on a case-by-case basis. Now, if we look specifically at favorites of minus 140 or higher, they are 246 and 114, 68.3%. They're 183 and 174 on the run line. 60 of those 246 wins by exactly one run. 186 of those 246 wins by two or more runs. So when you factor in the losses and factor in the 61 run wins, 51.67% of the time, favorites are winning by more than one run. So, you know, obviously that's in the, you know, minus 105 range area, which would be your, you know, implied break-even percentage, playing favorites of minus 140 or higher on that minus one run line. So is it a profitable thing overall? It's hard to say. You know, it all depends on what that minus one juice is that you're playing. But, you know, again, you want to look at this from a case-by-case basis. Favorites overall, 422 and 253. Favorites of minus 140 or higher, 246 and 114. As we've talked about in the past, favorites of minus 180 or higher have been very profitable the last few years. So, you know, do you want to cut into that vig a little bit and do the minus one line? Again, it's on a case-by-case basis. Depends on how strongly you feel about that game. Now, some books do specifically offer the minus one line. Some books don't. But you can create your own. The way that you do that is you bet X to win Y on the money line, and then you bet Y on the run line to win whatever that amount is. So, for example, here today, if you look at the Atlanta Braves, and you know, as I mentioned, money coming in against them here today, but if the line is minus 130, you bet 130 to win 100 on Atlanta, then you bet 100 to win 120 on the run line, which is at plus 120. So a one-run win would equal $100 on the money line, which is what you put on the run line. So if you win the money line with a one-run win, you break even because you won 100, but you bet 100 on the run line. So that's how you create your own minus one line if you're in a sports book that doesn't have one. So I know I threw a lot of numbers at you there, adam@bangthebook.com via email to get the notes. But overall, this is not a blanket thing that I would ever do. In certain spots, if you feel like you've got that really good edge, if you feel like you've got, you know, maybe a regression candidate on the other side, something like that, sure, you can play that minus one line and you can create your own where you bet X to win Y on the money line. And then Y is your bet amount on the run line. That's how you create your own minus one bet there. But again, I mean, you know, it's a question of risk management. So many of these questions I get on the Monday mailbag are questions of risk management, bankroll management, how exposed you want to be in a given situation. And I know a lot of people don't like laying the heavy chalk. And I can't blame them for that, especially for somebody that has a smaller bankroll. It's harder for you to absorb those minus 175, minus 200 types of losses. So you can cut it down with that minus one line. And keep in mind, you're going to get some one-run wins. Yeah, you're going to get situations where the favorites don't even cover. And then, you know, that doesn't win for you with the money line wager either. So, again, just another way to attack this business here. There are lots of ways to attack it. But again, you know, just keep in mind here that, you know, it can also be hard to take a winner off of your ticket because you didn't want to lay that minus 160, went with the minus one instead. So you have to understand you're giving something up in order to, you know, put less out there with your initial investment. Is that something you want to do all the time? I'm not so sure that it is. But again, obviously, you know, it's up to you. It's on a case-by-case basis. But there is some data there for you. Favorites so far, 109 run wins this season. Favorites overall, 422 and 253. And with this minus 140 sample, or higher that the listener asked about, 246 and 114 straight up, 186 of those 246 wins by two or more runs. So, you know, it's kind of a give and take. And that's just sort of, you know, what a lot of things are like here in this business. All right, Eric via email. It's the question I guess I was trying to get to before I forgot about Matt's two-part question there. Says, two examples from this past week. When betting an over, I took 9 plus 102 at one book instead of 8.5 minus 125 at another book, as 27 cents seemed like way too much to pay for that extra half run. A couple days later, betting an under, I took 8.5 minus 117 instead of 8 minus 107 as 10 cents seemed like a bargain for that extra half run. I know there are variables in each circumstance and no situation is the same, but what is the approximate true value of a half run? Well, I kind of tried to talk to some people, sort of crowdsource some opinions here, looked at some half point and some half run calculators, things like that. And really, depending on the book, it's anywhere between 20 and 30 cents that a half run is worth. You can see books will generally on totals go all the way to minus 125, and that's when they go up or down a half run. So if you're around minus 125 on the over of a 7.5 and plus 105 on the under of a 7.5, the actual value is around over minus 106, under minus 112. So you got about, you know, a 19 cent move on the over with a half run, and then you've got about, you know, a 17 cent move on the under with a half run. So I guess I would say on average, probably around 20 cents or so would be the value of a half run. Now, when you look at how sports books set this up, and I'll use BetOnline as an example, since that's what I use for tracking purposes for the article, the Arizona-San Diego line overnight was 7.5. It moved to 7 this morning. So it went from 7.5 over plus 105, under minus 125, to 7 over minus 115, under plus 105. So about 20-cent move on the over, 30-cent move on the under, so roughly 25 cents to split the difference. Like, the actual value for you as a bettor of a half run is in the 20-cent range. So, again, obviously, you know, you want to shop around. You know, you want to shop around for the best prices that are out there, the things that look most equitable to you, much like some places have dime lines on sides. Some places are going to have a different set of lines when it comes to totals. You know, they're going to have different VIG, different juices. They're going to try for different hold percentages, things like that. So, you know, in the two examples that are here, you know, for me, over 8.5 versus over 9, you know, a lot of games tend to fall in that range. That's kind of that in-between type of range that we've talked about, where totals of 9 or higher have been very good. Totals of 8, 8.5 have been sort of split. And then games that are supposed to be low scoring, under 7.5, have been low scoring. So you can take that into account too a little bit as well. And, you know, certainly think about it from your handicapping standpoint of, do you expect this game to be a 5-4 or a 6-4 type of game? Maybe you'd rather take the over 8.5 minus 125 instead of the over 9 plus 102. You know, obviously, you push with a 5-4 game, so that's not the worst thing in the world. But again, another risk management question, another bankroll management question, all up to you, all up to what's available to you. You know, if you've got under 8.5 minus 117 instead of under 8 minus 107, I'm taking the 8.5 because I'm taking 10 cents of juice. 27, you know, 30 cents of juice is a different kind of story, which is exactly what this question is sort of looking at. So the value of a half run somewhere in the 20 to 25 cent range would be the best answer that I could come up with for you here. We will see books generally move those, you know, in that 20 to 25, sometimes 30 cent range, depending on what the book is. So then, obviously, like anything else, shop around for the line that you're most comfortable with. But yeah, I think, you know, getting 10 cents for a half run is a big difference from 27 cents for a half run. I do the 10 cent thing all the time, even 15 cents. I feel like you're getting some value there, some equity at that point in time. Anything 25 or so cents, you probably are giving up that equity. So I would say anything 10 to 15 cents, 20 is probably about the average. Anything higher than that, you certainly want to be pretty careful with those. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com via email for the notes. We go beyond the box score here. We start with a look at the Astros and Red Sox series. Kind of a waiting game in game one. Rick Porcello working around a little bit of hard contact, keeping the Astros at bay, Gerrit Cole gives up one run, and the Astros win that game late as Porcello goes through the lineup for the fourth time. Alex Cora probably should have pulled the plug earlier than he did there in that one, but the Astros did wind up getting the window for us as we had Houston in that one. Only four swings and misses for Porcello in that start, 16 for Gerrit Cole. Then the Astros knock around Hector Velasquez in game two to play from in front, lose a bullpen game in game three, but a pretty even series overall for the most part. Red Sox, 20 at-bats with a runner in scoring position, but just 9 in the last two games. Astros with 24. One interesting development here, though, for this series. George Springer leaving that game hurt on Sunday. Lower tightness for him. This thing is a pretty significant loss because he's got a .313 average, .396 on base, .654 slugging percentage. At the top of that order for the Astros, they're already missing Jose Altuve. Keep an eye on Springer. The Astros, given their situation in the West, may decide that giving him 10 days off isn't a bad idea. We'll certainly see as they revisit things with him, probably here today. But, you know, he's a guy that's been such a catalyst at the top of the order. And that is something that you want to look at here as often as you can. Lineups that are getting production at the top of the order, this goes without saying, but they have a much better chance of scoring runs. We look at the Philadelphia Phillies here and their sweep of the Colorado Rockies as an example. You know, Andrew McCutchen, .369 OBP at the top of the order. Gene Segura, .365. They're setting the table for the middle of the order. And the Phillies, overall, they've kind of squandered their high walk rate. They're not a high average team. They're not hitting for as much power as you would think. But because they're generating so many opportunities with the top of the order getting on base, they're able to have success. They drew 15 walks in this series against the Rockies. The Rockies only drew 4, and one of them was Chad Bettis against Gerard Eichhoff. So Rockies hitters really only drew 3 walks in this series. The Phillies had 15. They get the sweep. You know, they knocked John Gray around in game one. They won a close game in game two. Aaron Nola was really good. Then Kyle Freeland can't get out of the second inning in game three. The bullpen falters down the line. When you draw walks, you give yourself a chance. There are 8 teams here this season with a walk rate of 10% or higher. The Cubs, Red Sox, Dodgers, Phillies, Indians, Brewers, Rangers, and Cardinals. Those teams respectively rank 8th, 9th, 5th, 12th, 23rd, 7th, 4th, and 10th in runs scored. The Astros, 9.9%. They're 11th in walk, or 9th in walk rate, excuse me. They're 2nd in runs scored. The only two teams in the top 13 in runs scored with a walk percentage under 9.2% are the Twins and Diamondbacks. Twins hitting for a ton of power. Diamondbacks just having a lot of success on high velocity contact. That's why I expect the Diamondbacks to drop off a little bit, because when those batted ball fortunes reverse, if you draw walks, you can still score runs. If you don't, it makes it a lot harder for you. Obviously, the outlier in the high walk rate category in the run score department is the Indians, who are 23rd. But, you know, you think offensively, they kind of get things going here as we go forward. But again, it's so important to give yourself a chance to score runs as often as possible in this run environment. And when you look at this series here, you know, the Rockies hit a bunch of solo home runs. The Phillies hit a couple, but they hit a few more two-run homers. All those individual runs really do add up. And if you can get those free base runners with the walks, it's very, very important. So for the Rockies here, something to watch is that if they don't have pitchers that are just terrible from a control standpoint and give them free passes, it is challenging for them to score runs, in particular on the road. Dodgers took 2 out of 3 from the Reds here. The Reds only scored 1 earned run off of Dodgers starting pitchers in this series. That was Rich Hill, Walker Buehler, and Hyunjin Ryu. 27-4 strikeout to walk ratio for Dodgers starter or for Dodgers pitchers overall in this series. And you know, Dodgers offense really could have been even better in this series. They squandered some opportunities in the final game yesterday, even though they still scored 8 runs. They got shut down by Tyler Mahle. They were only 3-for-21 with runner in scoring position in this series, but they've got it all. The rotation, the lineup, the bullpen. They've got pieces to add on at the trade deadline. The Dodgers, really right now, it looks like the Dodgers and the Astros again for the World Series. I mean, it just seems like the way that things are kind of shaking out. But you know, the Reds lucky to steal one of those games here in this series. And you know, we'll see what happens with the Reds going forward. They kind of had a patch where a lot of people were betting on them. Seems like now maybe they're going to kind of fall back off the pace a little bit. Finally, one more series to look at here beyond the box score. That's the Braves taking 2 out of 3 from the Milwaukee Brewers. Corbin Burns, as I mentioned, gave up 7 runs as the first reliever out of the bullpen in Friday's game. Max Fried was outstanding again. Mike Soroka was good in this series once again. Very good young core for the Atlanta Braves, not just with the rotation and with the lineup, but now they add a guy like Sean Newcomb to the bullpen. Tuki Toussaint is pitching in relief. These are two guys that can have a lot of success for them at the back end of this bullpen. Important developmental step organizationally for the Braves here. And I like what they're doing with Newcomb and Toussaint. Eventually, Toussaint probably does wind up in the rotation. But for right now, you know, getting a chance to develop his pitches at the big league level makes a lot of sense. Same thing for Newcomb here in this Braves bullpen. Yulis Chacin struggled again in this series for the Brewers. And more under the surface here. You know, if there's an injury from all this high slider usage, maybe it is just his command. But Yulis Chacin, you know, was an underappreciated, underrated guy in the markets the last 2 years. This year, he just hasn't pitched well. And, you know, he's not giving up a ton of hard contact, but the command just, it's not there. And I don't know if it's an injury situation or what, but he's toxic for me right now. I can't back him at all. Brewers were 6-for-25 with runners in scoring position in the first two games of the series, and they lost those two games. So a lot of opportunities for the Brewers offense in Sunday's game, though. And you know, this youth movement in baseball on the pitching side, it's just really, really impressive to watch. All right, so as we wrap up the Beyond the Box Score segment here, I want to touch on some pitchers that have gotten very lucky or very unlucky on high-velocity contact, batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour. As you know, every Thursday I take a look at this from a team standpoint. So you know that the league batting average on 95-plus miles per hour batted balls in the 525 range, the weighted on base average in the 665 range. So let's look at some outliers here, some guys that are having really bad luck on high-velocity contact. Chris Stratton has allowed a 725 batting average on high-velocity contact. Corbin Burns, a 707 batting average. Yu Darvish, 706. Mike Wright, 694. Drew Pomeranz, 692. Derek Holland, 674. Aaron Nola, 661. Eduardo Rodriguez, 658. Jordan Zimmerman, 639. Blake Snell and Alex Cobb, 633. So those are the top 10 guys in terms of highest batting averages allowed. Top 11, I guess, with Cobb in there. Highest batting averages allowed on batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour. Again, much like we look at with teams regressing to the mean, you would think that these guys who are 108 points or up, higher from the league average on 95-plus miles per hour batted balls, would have more success. Now, as I look at this list, some of these guys just aren't very good. But Yu Darvish, for instance, you know, a guy that he's all over the place with his control, but he's a guy that, you know, hasn't allowed a lot of hard contact this year. And you would think that he'd have some better fortunes than a 706 batting average just based on his talent level. Drew Pomeranz, I think the same thing. Aaron Nola, thing. Eduardo Rodriguez. Blake Snell is already phenomenal, and he's having some bad luck on high-velocity contact. So those are four guys I would expect to see some positive regression for in the near future. Guys like Darvish, Pomeranz, Nola, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Blake Snell. So I guess those five guys would be guys I would look at for some positive regression here on their batted ball data in the near future. Now, the bottom of that list, the guys that have had the most success on high-velocity contact, Jake Odorizzi, a 368 batting average, Chris Paddock, 371, Domingo Herman, 385, Shane Bieber, 391, Mike Fiers, 394, Victor Alcantara, 394, Felix Pena, 400, Spencer Turnbull, Yanni Chirinos, and CeCe Sabathia, all at 400. Think about it. Odorizzi, Paddock, Herman, Bieber. When did I talk about those guys already on today's show? As guys with expected regression in that WOBA minus X WOBA department. So this is another sign of how those guys are in line for some difficulties here going forward, is that they've been very fortunate on their high velocity contact. So what I would look for here, fading guys like Odorizzi, like Paddock, like Herman, like Bieber against opposing lineups that make a lot of hard contact and have a lot of success with it. the Mariners, the Twins, the Astros, the Yankees, the Rockies at home. You know, teams that make high-velocity contact and have had success with it. When I go on Thursday and do the teams that are the best in batting average and WOBA on high-velocity contact, if they face guys like Odorizzi, Paddock, Herman, Bieber, Pena, stuff like that, those are matchups where we would expect regression. Those are matchups where I think we can get edges in the marketplace to face these guys that have had so much success on the high-velocity contact. Some other notables here that have had success but aren't in the bottom or in the top 10, I guess, as it were. Bueller, Bailey, Brian Shaw, Cashner, Soroka, Freeland, Lucchesi, Hendricks. Guys have had a lot of success on this high-velocity contact stuff and guys that you maybe look for some regression from as we go forward here. Now, as mentioned, as you know, the team WOBAs, or the league WOBA, generally averages around 665-ish. So the guys that have the highest weighted on base averages and the lowest weighted on base averages are Corbin Burns, 1.042, Stratton, 958, Darvish, 957, Cobb, 952, Colin McHugh is an interesting one, 935, Mike Fultonevich, 928, Pomerantz, 920, Holland, 912, Vince Velasquez and Manny Benuelos, 898, McHugh, Fultonevich, Pomerantz. Guys I would expect some better results from here in the very near future, and to an extent, Yu Darvish as well, assuming he stops walking everybody under the sun. But, again, you look for regression to the mean. This is part of my handicapping strategy, is that regression analysis. So those guys should see improvements here in the near future. Now, guys that are faring very well on high-velocity contact from a WOBA standpoint, Mike Soroka, 415. Part of this is because he's such an extreme ground ball guy, but part of it is also that he's gotten pretty lucky on his high-velocity contact. Once again, same names. Domingo Herman, 469. Homer Bailey, 474. Jake Odorizzi, 474. Marcus Stroman, 475. But again, another very high ground ball percentage guy. Chris Paddock, 479. Luis Castillo, something of a fade candidate to me, 488. Kyle Hendricks, 493. Joe Musgrove, 494. Spencer Turnbull, 499. Again, guys having good and bad luck on hard contact. Adam at bangthebook.com to get the notes here with that list of names. All right, let's go down the lines here. Talk about some line moves dating back to Friday. We saw a big line move on Max Scherzer and the Nationals against the Cubs. The Cubs did win that game, but some of that an ex-WOBA-induced line move. Cole Hamels, again, plus 38 points in WOBA minus ex-WOBA. Scherzer, big ERA, low FIP. So a lot of things aligning there for that line move, which just happened not to work out. Saw John Gray money come in on the Rockies against the Phillies in Friday's game. The market keeps trying with John Gray, man. They keep hoping that he can figure it out. Hasn't really been able to figure it out to this point this season. Saw very heavy money on Friday on Joey Lucchesi in that Padres versus Pirates game. The problem is that the Padres cannot hit any right-handed pitcher with a decent curveball. Jordan Lyles shut him down. Adam Wainwright shut him down. They just can't hit guys that have curveballs from the right side. Lyles' best pitch, a right-handed curveball. He shut down the Padres there. That heavy steam was a loser in that one. Raised money on Friday. It was Ryan Stanek opening against CC Sabathia. Sabathia faded pretty much every time out here, as we all know. Big money came in against Daniel Norris on Friday. It was the A's against the left-handed pitcher. And Daniel Norris has been faded quite a bit here so far this season. So heavy Matt Harvey money on Friday for the Angels. The Angels are a very popular team. They took money again on Saturday. They've taken money here today on Monday. They're taking a lot of money here of late. They're a laggard in the batting average on balls in play statistic. They have some other things where people kind of like them a little bit. I'm not necessarily a huge fan, but the Angels have seen a lot of line moves in their favor here in the recent future or in the recent past. The only other thing that we saw big Dakota Hudson fade in Texas on Saturday. That one didn't work out. We were on Texas in that game. Hudson actually pitched pretty well in that effort for the Cardinals. Sunday, we saw money come in on Kyle Freeland. When money hits the board on Kyle Freeland, it raises my eyebrows a little bit. Didn't work out. Didn't make it out of the second inning, but it was certainly interesting to see that move. Heavy money on Chris Sale. That was in part to back Sale, in part to fade Wade Miley. That money did get to the window as the Red Sox won that bullpen battle. The Yankees got steamed into a favorite against Charlie Morton. A little bit surprised with that one. Chad Green getting the start did not pitch well in that bullpen game for the Yankees. Nestor Cortes Jr. wound up following Chad Green. They did enough damage against Charlie Morton to get by, but that was an interesting line move, one that I didn't necessarily get. Still don't, even in light of the outcome. So Yusei Kikuchi and the Mariners get flipped into a favorite. That was against Kyle Gibson and the Minnesota Twins. Once again, a line move I didn't necessarily get, but the Mariners did get to the window in that one. So on Monday here, we've seen a big fade of Mike Soroka and the Braves down from minus 160 into the minus 125, minus 130 range against Soroka, an ex-Wilbur regression candidate, a guy that's allowed some hard contact but has had very good success with it. So money coming in against him today. I don't agree with it just because I don't like Andrew Suarez, but I understand where that line move is coming from. Money on Carlos Carrasco. He's been driven up into a bigger favorite. Again, an ex-Woba positive regression candidate, so money comes in on him. Jay Happ money coming in for the Yankees. Big ex-Woba fade of Andrew Cashner. Again, this happens every day, people. Go to Baseball Savant.com. Go to your page. Go to the expected statistics for pitching. Ex-Woba line moves happen every day, period. Just is what it is. And again, Jake Odorizzi, ex-Woba fade candidate against the Angels. Angels taking money again here today. So a lot of ex-Woba movement in the market for today. My pick for today, I'm going to take the A's and the Indians under 8. Stiff wind expected to be blowing in from left field with two right-handed heavy lineups. So the wind should knock down some batted balls to left field. It's a better park for left-handed hitters anyway with that high wall to the left side. But Carrasco with that swing and miss against a right-handed lineup. With Brett Anderson, you have to string hits together and make those walks hurt. The Indians really haven't done a whole lot of that this year. So I think he can get by. I like both of these bullpens. Take A's and Indians under 8. As we look at the week ahead here, let's preview that A's and Indians series. You've got Brett Anderson and Carlos Carrasco tonight. Chris Bass, he takes on Trevor Bauer, who's allowed a lot of hard contact this year. A home run issue has popped up once again. Very scary to back Trevor Bauer right now. Then Frankie Montas and Yeffrey Rodriguez in Wednesday's getaway day game. Yeffrey Rodriguez is a regression candidate. So as I look at this series, I like the A's series price a little bit as an underdog here. I think they should close a road favorite on Wednesday. I don't mind Bassett against Bauer on Tuesday. I don't think the A's win tonight, so obviously you're up against it a little bit. But you know, the Indians beat up on the Orioles, and a lot of teams have. Are these some sustainable gains for them? Was it just Orioles pitching? We'll have to wait and see. But I do like the A's series price a little bit here with a good chance at winning Tuesday and Wednesday. White Sox and Astros. This one's kind of interesting to me because this White Sox offense is sneaky decent. You've got that George Springer injury. Astros off of playing the Red Sox. Do we get a little bit of a letdown here from Houston? I don't know. It's tough because Ryan Burr gets the spot start tonight for the White Sox against Brad Peacock. Then you've got Dylan Covey against Justin Verlander, Ivan Nova against Garrett Cole, Lucas Giolito and Corbin Martin in Thursday's game. What could prevent a letdown here for the Astros is Verlander and Cole on the mound. But maybe some plus 1.5, some plus 2.5s here with the White Sox could be in order. I think they're a better team than what their metrics currently show. I think offensively they're certainly a better team than what their metrics currently show. Maybe some plus 2.5 alternate run line plays could work out for the Astros here in this series. Diamondbacks and Padres. Luke Weaver, Chris Paddock tonight should be a real good one. Zach Greinke, Matt Strom tomorrow. Merrill Kelly and Eric Lauer on Wednesday. Diamondbacks do get two left-handed starters to go against in this series. Padres getting three more righties, though. Greinke's a bad matchup for them. I don't think Luke Weaver's a good matchup for them either. They could hit Merrill Kelly on Wednesday, though. So I may look at the Padres or maybe a first five over situation on Wednesday. Eric Lauer going up against that right-handed Diamondbacks lineup is a little bit scary. Maybe an under on Tuesday. Matt Strom has pitched very, very well. Contact management type of guy, lots of low velocity contact. He's a guy I do kind of like a little bit in that Tuesday game, and I certainly like Zach Greinke, assuming the oblique is okay in that matchup against the Padres. Finally, one more series here, the Twins and the Angels. Jake Odorizzi and Taylor Cole tonight. I believe Taylor Cole, the opener for Felix Pena. So that could wind up being an over situation if Pena is announced as the bulk reliever. Michael Pineda, Trevor Cahill on Tuesday, both of those guys having problems. Cahill's been terrible this year. Then Martin Perez and Matt Harvey on Wednesday. Twins are getting some guys here that allow a lot of hard contact if Pena is the guy tonight. So maybe an over series here. Will we see Angels money keep hitting the board? We certainly could. Are the Twins overrated a little bit? They certainly could be. Some people believe that. So the line moves for this series will be fascinating to watch. I don't know how involved I'm going to be overall. But again, could be a lot of contact, a lot of runs scored in this series. Nothing else this week. We'll just do another Bettors Box on Thursday. And the next week, we'll do a Bettors Box Monday, Thursday. And we'll have UFC probably that week as well. So keep it tuned right here to Bang the Book Radio, and specifically the Bettors Box right here on Mondays and Thursdays. So do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.